Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Samach Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 18 lines from the top of Daf Samach Aleph. We open with a Dibur Masle quote from the Mishnah. That was on Daf Nun Tesum at Beis. Hichnisa loy shivcha achas. We're describing a woman who enters her marriage with maidservants. The Mishnah described activities that a woman who gets married is expected to perform. After all, we know that the wife, the woman, is supported by her husband. And in exchange for his support, so there are activities she is expected to do. And the Mishnah went on to say that if she brings into the marriage maidservants, so they will do those activities. So it depends on the number of maidservants she brings in, as was delineated by the Mishnah. So now we pick up our Gemara with a topic heading on the side and the margin before we read the actual text. The triangles that appear highlight Mispar Hashvachis, the number of maidservants she machnisa, that she brings into the marriage. V'ech Tosefes Kol Achas Mashpia Al Chavisa, and how the each additional one that she brings in will affect her obligations, the wife's obligations. So now the Gemara text. Hechnisa lo shivcha achas, ha shara avda. The Mishnah mentioned that if she brings in one shivcha, so the wife won't have to grind the wheat, nor bake and wash clothing. But the other activities, and the Mishnah accounted for 7 activities, all the other activities, the wife will have to do. So the Gemara asks, v'tema lei, let the wife say, if there were no shvachos, so I would have to do all of the activities. So now I'm bringing in one shivcha. So let the wife say, "Ilis loch itzah b'charikoi." I'm bringing in an itzah woman in my place. In other words, instead of my doing all of the activities, the woman, the maidservant that I'm bringing into our marriage, she shall do all the activities. Mishum. So the response that the husband would give is Mishum to Omar law, he would be able to say back to her, "Ha torcha ladidi uladida." The woman you just brought into the marriage, her efforts will be for me and for herself. Kami didach man torach, for you, who will take care of you? So that is from the husband's perspective, it's not such a straightforward matter that just because there's a maidservant, she comes to take over all of the wife's responsibilities and the wife does nothing. So in order for the couple, the husband and the wife, to be cared for, the maidservant that comes in doesn't have to do all of the activities. Some activities remain with the wife. Shtayim, eino mevasheles veino maniko v'chulei. The Mishnah went on to say that if two maidservants were brought in, so in addition to what the one maidservant reduced, the second one reduces. There is no more cooking for the wife to do, nor any nursing of the child. Ha shara avda, but the other activities, the balance of the activities, so the wife will do. V'teimole, why can't the wife say, "Ilis loch itzo achriti," I brought into the marriage an additional woman, the torcha ledidi uledida, v'chada ledidach uledida. Just like you claimed before that one maidservant would leave me uncared for. Now I'm bringing in two maidservants, so the first one will take care of your needs and her own needs, and the second will take care of my needs and her own needs. Mishum diomar law, because the husband will say that just because you brought in two maidservants, that doesn't mean everything is covered. Kami orchi uparchi mantor, who will take care of the needs of orchi uparchi, a reference to different types of guests. Orchim, Rashi says, are orchim, that they're long-term guests. Parchi are people that are travelers, they're wayfarers, they're coming and going. But these different types of guests, who will take care of them? So that it's, once again, it's not enough that you brought in two women to the to our marriage. There still is more work that needs to be done. The Mishnah said, Shalosh eino matzah samita. If three maidservants are brought in, so she doesn't have to, the wife doesn't have to make the bedding and doesn't have to do the wool work. Ha shara avda, but other things she will have to do. From studying Rashi on the Mishnah, one might surmise that those other things might include bringing things for the husband from downstairs to upstairs. So, with that in mind, the Gemara continues. The Temole, after she brings in three maidservants to the marriage, let the wife say, Ailis loch achriti loorchi uparchi. Here now I've brought in a third woman to take care of the wayfarers and guests, so there's nothing more for me to do. Answer, Mishum de Omar Law, the husband can say, Nofish b'nei beisa, nofish urchi uparchi. Because there is, besides yourself and myself, the three maidservants, everyone has their own guests that come to visit them at some time or another. So nofish means there's an increase, there's a lot of guests. So therefore, just because you brought in three maidservants, that doesn't mean that you have nothing to do. Well, ihochi afilo arbanami. Then if that's the case, and even if she brings in four maidservants, the activities increase, and the wife should not be described as having nothing to do. And yet the Mishnah says that when she brings in four, she's Yoshemis Bekatedra, she sits and doesn't have to do anything. The Gemara answers, Arba, once there are four maidservants, Keva Denefishi Luhu Misayan Ahadodi. There's a type of, we'll say, maybe we can describe it as exponential work power that kicks in at this point. That once you have four people working, they'll be able to take care of the increased number of wayfarers, leaving no work for the wife to do. And hence the Mishnah said that if four are brought in, Yoshevis Bekatedra, she sits in her cubicle just doing whatever she personally wants to do without any further obligations. Om Rav Chona v'itemo Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni lo hichniso lo imamish. When the Mishnah describes the woman marrying, bringing in four maidservants or bringing in any number of maidservants, it doesn't mean that she actually brings in, physically speaking, a woman into the marriage, an additional woman into this household. Elo kivon shruya lahachnis afa bishalo hichniso. Since she's, once we say she's fit to bring in, which means the woman brings in a very large dowry, enough funds, enough property in the dowry that she brings into the marriage that would enable the hiring or the purchasing of maidservants, that is enough reason for reducing the amount of activities that the wife has to do. Tana, echot shechnisala ve'echot shetzintzama loy mishala. Whether it's a woman that brings into the marriage a maidservant, or it's a wife that saves up. Tzimtzuma means she reduces her own expenditures and thereby saves up money from her own funds, from money that's coming to her, enough with which to buy a to buy or hire a maid servant. That also is considered reason enough for the wife to have this, to enjoy this reduced responsibility. Before we continue, let us glance at the side. We have a structural note where a double underline appears. This double underline is used to highlight Meimros Reb Yitzchok Bar Chananya Omar Rav Huna. The Gemara. Omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Chananya Omar Rav Huna. Afapi Sheomru Yosheves Bekatedra. Even though we described in the Mishnah a woman who brought in four maidservants as now being able to sit in inactivity in her cubicle, Avol, not exactly. Mozeges lokois, she'll still be expected to be the one to fill up wine for her husband. Umatsas loy es hamita, and she will still be expected to prepare his, make his bedding. Which this itself is an interesting thing to note, because in the Mishnah, the bringing in of three maidservants was reason for that being relinquished, but it seems from this statement that no, that won't. The tsemer obligation is then that which would be released, but the matzah smita would remain. And the third thing she's expected to do is harchasas ponov yodav raglov, and to wash his face, arms, and feet. The Omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Chananya Omar Rav Huna. Kol melochos sho'isha oisu labaylo nida oisu labaylo. All activities that a woman does for her husband, a menstruant woman, when she is in a state of physical prohibition, contact prohibition, with regard to her husband, nevertheless, she does for her husband. These very three things that we said are the minimal wife requirements when she is a nida, so she will not do these things. These things are associated with a sense of attraction, emotional / physical attraction, which is something that during the nidah period we want to avoid. V'hatsoas mita. Here you can see a new geometric forms on the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei mivne heading. Dine shinui. We're going to see behavioral changes or procedural changes when it comes to the functioning of an isha nida with regard to her husband, so that they do not come to this point of attraction. And the diamond that you see are hadgoshas pulos. We're emphasizing the different activities. And we've emphasized hatsoas mita and mezigas kos. So now the Gemara continues. V'hatsoas mita, we said that a nida will not do for her husband the making of the bedding. Omar Rava lo amar nela b'fonav. The restriction is only in his presence. If he's not in the room, less lawn bar, then we'd have no objection if the wife, who's a nida, will make his bed, will prepare the sheets and set up the bedding. Umezigas akois, with regard to the pouring of wine, let's just assume for a moment that the standard way would be that a husband holds a cup of wine and she pours the wine into the cup while he's holding it. That is something that a nida would not do. If we can demonstrate some type of change, so then that will be a sign, so to speak, to prevent the husband from taking things a step further and engaging in physical contact. It might be, we might call it a simon, a reminder that she is off limits at this point in time. So Shmuel machlifo le devisu biyodo desmoila. Instead of using the right hand, she would switch to the left hand. Devisu means his wife. So Shmuel's wife would switch do it with the left hand. Abaye mancha le apuma dekuba. Abaye's wife would fill up the cup while it was placed on the edge of a barrel. Rava Abay Sadya. Rava's wife would pour the cup and place it on a Bay Sadya, a mattress, on a bed. Rashi says Abay Sadya may Rashosov. Bay Sadya might be maybe more accurate reference to a pillow, but above his head. Rav Papa Ashar Shifa. Rav Papa's wife would pour the wine and place it on a bench, on a footstool. All of these are changes from the standard way of filling up a husband's cup of wine. V'yomer Rav Yitzchak bar Chanan, yomer Rav Huna, hakol mashin b'fnei hashamash. Here we're going to get into a new topic, but it's here in the Gemara because of the same author. So on the side we have a topic heading, the nosei, that's lehitchashev, to act with consideration, b'taivis anoshim shebasiva kishemagishim mozon reichani u'megareh. Let's imagine you're in the vicinity of people that are serving you food, and the food, the simple case would be a waiter who's hired to serve people food, portions of food. And the food in question is very is highly scented. It's odoriferous and alluring in its odor. It's megared. It's arousing, arousal of appetite. So that someone who's serving the food, and it's not his own food to eat from, but he's simply like a hired hand to serve it. How do we treat them? So the Gemara goes on to describe this. Hakol mashin b'fnei hashamosh. Mashin means to delay. In terms of giving the waiter a portion, we delay feeding him until the guests get up, until the guests are finished. Chutz mi bosar v'yayin, with the exception of meat and wine. Om Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda qualifies this. Bosar shomein v'yayin yoshan. Fatty meat and aged wine. Omar Rava, Bosar shomein kol hashana kula. Fatty meat, this applies all year. Yayin yoshan betkufas tamas. And the aged wine, it has an especially strong scent and arousal in the summer season. Omar Rav Onan bar Tachlifa, havi koimno kamei demor Shmuel. Rav Onan says, I was standing in front of Shmuel, va'aisu le tavshilo da ardin, and they served him a dish of ardin. It's not important for us to translate that, other than state, Rashi says, min kameinu pitrus. Pitrus are generally translated as mushrooms, kameim translated often as truffles. Whatever the case is, he was served that kind of dish. V'ilav diyohev lei, and if I had not given to some to the v'ilav diyohev li, in other words, we have Rav Onan who was standing in front of Shmuel, who was serving Shmuel, and if not for the fact that Shmuel gave to me. Me is again Rav Onan, who was serving him. If not for that, istachni, I would have been in a state of danger. Rashi says, istachni oisim misuka lachsoni bulmus machmas tavas ravoini. A person who's overcome suddenly with a certain ravenous rage, if he's not fed, so it can have negative results. Omar Ravashi, Havakim Nakame Dravkana Vaisule Gar Galidi the Lifta Bahala. And Ravashi tells us a similar story that he was serving Rav Kahana, and they were serving him a dish, and I brought him, and they were serving him a dish of this thing called gargalide, the lifta. Lifta is a type of vegetation. Bechala is in vinegar, so there's a certain pungency associated with this dish. Ve'ilav diyohav li, and if not for Rav Kahana giving some to me, istachni, I would have been endangered. Rav Papa afilu tamrasa dahagunya. Rav Papa says even that kind of food item, tamrasa dahagun, tamrasa are dates. Rashi says tomorrow shmeina kamo korov legabi dahina veidhan. It's a type of a rich date. So even that is a kind of food that one must take into consideration the feelings of the waiter. Klola de milso, the Gemara now gives us a rule, the rule that we alluded to earlier, called isle reichav isle kiwa. Any food item that has an odor to it and has kiwa, kiwa is a word that might be associated with acidity or pungency. Those kind of foods are those that you must give the waiter some immediately. Avua bar'ihi, uminyomin bar'ihi. We have two, seeming they seem to be brothers. Chad sofi mikol mino mino. V'chad sofi michad mino. One, sofi means to feed the waiter. One would feed the waiter from every dish that was brought to him. He would give to the waiter. And the others, chad sofi michad mino. Rashi says, v'chad sofi le mi min echod, betchilas suda lesova, umishar minim mishishohu, masho ad shigmor sudaso. The other one's practice was to give the waiter one food item at the beginning of the meal for him to feel sated on. And the other dishes, he would wait till after the meal to give him. So in contrast, though, the first approach seems that as each dish was served, that particular host would give his waiter. So you have two different practices here. More mishtoy elio bahadei, more lo mishtoy elio bahadei. One merited, one practice was viewed as greater than the other, so the better practice merited the one who did so to have Elio speak with him. The other one, the lesser desirable, although nice practice, but the lesser desirable, did not merit him having Elio speak with him. It would be my guess that the one who gave the waiter from each dish as it was being served would be the more meritorious procedure, because in that case you never the waiter was never put to the test of holding off on something that was especially desirous. Hano tartin chasidi v'amrila Rav Mori Rav Pinchas b'nei Rav Chisda. There were two pious individuals, and another version has the names Rav Mori and Rav Pinchas, the sons of Rav Chisda. Here too you have two practices. Mar kodim sofi. One would feed the shamash before he would serve. Umar ma'achas sofi, and the other delayed in feeding the shamash. So that in Rashi you see kodim sofi kodim shitein lefanov, before the waiter would serve, the host would say, you take from the dish you're about to serve. And ma'achar sofi, Rashi says, mikol minu min la'achar shenosan lefanov lefnei orchem. The other practice was that each dish, as it was being served, first the guests are to receive their portion, the host and the guest, and then the waiter. So now we said there are two practices, and they're actually, like we saw before, valued differently. The Kodim Safi, Elio Mishtoi Bade, the one who had adopted the practice of making sure the waiter ate before the host and guests, Elio spoke with him. Elio, the prophet Elio, and meriting that is obviously something that's that not many experience. And the Ma'achar Safi, the one who made the waiter wait before getting the taste of that food, Lo Mishtoi Elio Bade. He didn't merit having Elio speak with him. Rashi adds just another detail. Rashi that we're looking at is around six lines from the bottom. Safi Mishtoi, the Kodim Safi Mishtoi Elio Bade, the Vishik Shinoisin Lifneim, when he is serving them, who roe umisava umitzdayer, if he wouldn't have the food beforehand, so you have the situation of the waiter serving the food to the guests, and as time went on, the desire increases, and the necessity of abstaining increases the strain. Sometimes there are many guests, so you can imagine that the strain level is being increased each time, so that the practice of Kodim Safi was quite meritorious, and hence the practitioner of that method was meritorious of having Elio speak with him. As we go on, we have a new marking. The volcano shape introduces Shnei Maisim, two stories, two incidents, Shamushut Amushutav Lohem, Mazon Hamegare. The common point between these stories involves a food that arouses desire. Amemar Marzutra Vravashi. By the way, take note of the long Maisa marking that you have for this Maisa and the following Maisa. So we have in this story Amemar Marzutra Varvashi Habakoyasvi Abisko de Bey Azgur Malka. Three great Rabbonim that were seated at the entrance of the Persian monarch's palace. The name of the name or title of the monarch was Azgur. Cholaf Yozil Aturniga de Malka. There passed by these three rabbis the king's servant. But now Tornaga has a specific role. He is the one that sets out the portions in front of the ministers, in front of the officials. We'll call him the royal waiter. Chasye Rav Ashi noticed Lemarzutra. He noticed Marzutra, who was sitting with them. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Chivarape, that he suddenly turned pale. Shokal Betz Bose Onachle Bepume. So he took his finger and touched the food with his finger and placed it on Marzutra's mouth. Omarle, so the royal waiter said to Rav Ashi, Afsidis Lusudasa de Malka, you ruined the king's meal. Look, you put your finger into his food, you ruined his meal. Omru le Amai Tavid Hochi. So the police that were there said to Rav Ashi, why'd you behave thusly? Why'd you do that? Omar Lahu, Rav Ashi said back to them, Man de Ovid Hochi Postil Amaychal de Malka. One who prepares food like this is unfit to feed the king from his culinary production. Omrule Amai, so the police said, what's the problem here? What's wrong? Omar Lahu, so Rav Ashi said, Dovarachir Chazoi Bey. I saw here some Mitzora afflicted, Saras afflicted pork meat. Bodku v'lo ashkichu, the police looked for this tsaras afflicted. Tsaras is In English, people translate it as leprous, but it's associated with some color change where there's an intense whiteness that appears, which indicates it's diseased meat. So they searched that, didn't find. Shokal etzbaasei onacholei. Ravashi took the finger of the cook and placed it on one of the pieces. Omar Lahu, and he said to those around him, Acha mi bad kisa, did you check over here, this piece? Bad kuashkechu, he checked out that piece, and miraculously, it turned out to be afflicted. Amrulei Rabbonan, my time of Samchus Anisa, they said to Ravashi, how is it that you relied on a miracle? And Jewish law, we have a principle, Ein Soimchen Al Anes. One does not live his life in reliance upon miracles, in reliance upon that which requires, we'll say, immediate divine intervention to change nature. This is not something that Judaism at all advocates. And yet Ravashi seemed to be Soimech Al Anes. Omar Lahu, Ravashi says, I wasn't reliant on, completely reliant on a miracle, because Chazoi Ruach Tzoras de Koporcho Iluya. I saw above Marzutra the. Now, this is very hard to translate. It's an abstract or a mystical idea, but it's the spirit of Tzoras was hovering over Marzutra's head. So that Ruach of Tzoras indicated that there was, in fact, a Tzoras problem here. And by my putting the finger on the piece of meat, so activated, we'll say, the spirit of Tzoras to manifest itself. So it's not a, as we would say then, it's not a total miracle, being that there was already some element of Tzoras present before I took action. Another Maisa. Ahu Roma. Roma, we'll say, is a person from Rome. The Omar law lahi itza. He said to a particular woman, Minsvisli, would you agree to marry me? Omra le, lo, no, I don't want to marry you. Well, he was obviously taken aback, he was offended, and so now you'll see what he does. Ozil Aisi Rimni. He went ahead and brought a food item called Rimni. Maybe we'll translate it as a pomegranate. Poli V'ochal kamo. He cut it into pieces, and in her presence, he started to eat from it. Now, we don't have to commit ourselves to a translation, but it's enough for us to say that this Rimni item is something that had the characteristics of the food we described on Omer Aleph. There's a certain aroma and pungency to it. And as a result of that, the woman who was sitting there experienced excessive salivation. Komaya Ditsari law, Maya is the accumulated saliva that resulted in her being exposed to the pungency of this food item. It's that which one experiences when he's in the presence of food that he's not partaking of. So Bala says she swallowed that saliva. Velo hav law, and he didn't give anything to her, ad dezog law, until her face and her belly started to swell. So he's you can see that he has an obvious tactic here. Lesof Omar law, and he saw that she was definitely experiencing discomfort, maybe putting things mildly, and he then said to her, I masino loch min sevisli, if I make you better, if I heal you, will you then marry me? Omro Lehin, yes. Apparently desperate at this point. She says, yes, I agree. Ozil, I see Rimni. He then brought some more of this very food item. Poli v'ochal kamo, he split it, cut it into pieces, ate in front of her. Omar lo, and then he told her, komaya ditzari loch, all the saliva that accumulates and causes you this desire, so tov shadoi, spit it out. As soon as it accumulates, spit it out. And she did this, ad denafka mino, until there emerged from within her, ki utso yarko, what appeared to be a green branch, the itzias, and that represented her healing. The topic heading that we have on the side of the Gemara, the Nose, reads, "Beinyan chiyuv isha lasos bepishtan," regarding expectation of women to engage in work with fabrics. Pishtan, we'll see a reference to Pishtan. The Mishnah we saw a reference to wool. In this discussion, we'll see a reference to Pishtan. Pishtan is flax. It's the raw material from which linen fabrics are made. So our Gemara is medayik, but tzemer in bepishtim lo. The woman's obligation is to work with tzemer, not to work with pishtim, not to work with flax. Masnisen money. Our mission in saying thusly is in accordance with whom? Answer, Rabbi Yehuda hi. Our mission is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Desanya, eino, kefe, a husband cannot force his wife, and there are a number of things that are listed here, and you'll see a dashed underlining a little bit later, which is our point regarding the Pishtun. But in the meantime, a husband cannot force his wife. Lo lamoid lifnei oviv. Now the word lamoid, as we saw before in Aramaic, kaimi kame, but it has to do with serving. A person cannot force his wife to serve his father. Lo lamoid lifnei beno, nor his son. But we can certainly assume that son is a child from another marriage. Velo litain tevin lifnei behemto, nor to force his wife to serve hay to his behemto. Now, what behemto means? There actually are two pshatim in the Rashi. So, if we look together in the Rashi, actually, maybe just another phrase in the Gemara, and then we'll appreciate the Rashi more. Avol kefe litain tevin lifnei bekoro. Now, before seeing this Gemara, I would assume, many people would assume, that behema and bokor are almost interchangeable expressions. But here, obviously, they are not, because there's a different law that applies to behema versus bokor. So what are these things? So we look in the Rashi, behemto, number one, there are two pshatim we said before in Rashi. Behemto is sus v'chamor. Sus is a horse, chamor donkey, shehein, mizuyonim, vitzolim, l'revia. These are animals that have a high level of, say, maybe we'll call it sexual activity. They're diligent in revia. Revia has to do with intimacy. Avol bokor, but other kinds of animal, bokor then by process of elimination, so it's not horses nor donkeys, so we'll say it's in the realm of cows. Bokor eino lohu achar revias isha. They wouldn't desire intimacy with a woman. And again, this is in contrast to sus chamor, that would be happy to experience that. V'en yitzro nikur kolkach, and its desire isn't so obvious. L'fikoch ein isha nistei slo. Therefore, a woman would not be seduced by this yetzer. Now we're saying things that are certainly to the Western city dweller, and I'm sure amongst our listeners we have many of those. These would appear to be quite surprising, but when Chazal say things, do not take these things lightly. It's one of these kind of things to just keep it in the back of your mind, that there are different tendencies amongst animals, and and women, human beings, can be affected by these tendencies. Another pshat Rashi has, V'ani shomati b'koro nekevos behemto zechorem, that a boker is a reference to females and behemo is a reference to zechorem. The Bach has difficulty with this second pshat, but he offers a possible way to accept it anyway. That having been said, we go back to the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Omer, and this is where we become interested as far as our sugya is concerned, Af eino kofe lasos the pishton. He cannot force his wife to work with flax. V'nei shepishton masriachas hapeh u'mesharbet es hasfosayim. In working with flax is a type of reed that is fibrous, and in peeling it apart to find the strands of that will eventually be spun and made into linen thread for linen fabric production, there's a person who's working with the flax has to put it. He needs saliva and puts it in his mouth for making it easier to work with. So it has there's a side effect from working with it, and that creates bad breath, bad odor in one's mouth, and it causes a swelling of the lips. As Rashi says, he says she tzricha lishroi sachut tomid barok. She always has to keep the threads soaked in saliva. And as I said, my impression is that it's like people sometimes have put thread in their mouth before threading a needle. So this seems to be a constant process of having the fibers in one's mouth. Let's continue in the Gemara. We made a diuk, and what we're saying now is based on the Tosfos commentary that b'tzemer in b'pishton lo. Yes, tzemer, but not with pishton. V'ani mi b'kisna rumot. This is true with Roman flax. Kisna is pishton. That kind of flax is what causes these side effects. Rabbi Lezer Omer, afilu ichnisa lo mea shvachos, we saw in the Mishnah on Daf Nun Tesomet Beis that even if a woman enters a marriage with 100 bondmaids, the husband can insist that she works with wool, that she preoccupies herself with wool, with the spinning of wool. And the Mishnah Rabbi Lezer mentioned because inactivity brings to zima, can lead a person to immorality. Our Gemara, Omar of Malchio, Omar of Ado Bar Avo, Halacha Kerebi Eliezer. Halacha follows Rebbe Eliezer in that the work with Tzemer is something that she will always have to do. Omar of Hanina Brei Dravika. Now we have a double underline marking, and on the side of the Gemara, under the structural note, this is a highlighting of Shnei Deos al Eza Halochas Rav Malchioi Omar vi Ezo Rav Malchia. We have two names of Amorim that are very similar. Rav Malchio versus Rav Malchio. And each one of these names is associated with a series of laws. The question is, which name is associated with which particular laws? So Rav Hanina Brei Dravika tells us there are six laws, three and three. The first three are associated, we'll see, with Rav Malchio, and they are referred to by headline words. Since each one of these words represents an entire sukya in different masechtos, we're not going to delay on what they represent, because in Gemara markings, as you may have heard us in the past, we're strong advocates, not only in the context of the Daf Yomi learning that that these shiurim are part of, but in general, every Jew should learn all of the Talmud, so that even though in certain places we are concise with our description of things, it's all in the hope and belief that you're going to see these topics in their own context when they arise. So we're not going to explain each one of these six halachas other than refer to them by their titles. So halacha one is shpud, number two shvachos, and number three gumos. Now here you see we dashed on the line shvachos, because shvachos is something that we just learned about. It has to do with this whole topic that's featured in the Mishnah. I emphasize, featured in the Mishnah, concerning women who bring into their marriage maidservants. The Rav that deals with these halachas is Rav Malchiyo. Now, numbers 4, 5, and 6, the topic of Bloris, Efer Makle, and Gevina, those are topics that were dealt with by Rav Malchiyo. Rav Papa has a different breakdown. And in following the simplest approach, the approach that you'll find in Rashi, Tosfos has a slightly more elaborate approach, but following the simplest approach, Rav Papa he disagrees with Rav Hanina Breder of Iko's breakdown, and Rav Papa says in a somewhat we'll say abstract unclear fashion, he says Masnisinu Masnisa Rav Malchiyo Shmaitza Rav Malchiyo. Now let us explain. Masnisa and Masnisa refer to Tanaic sources. They're Mishnayos and Brises. We, for our purposes, they all fall under the heading of Tanaic material. Those topics that are rooted in or commentaries on a Mishnah, so those topics were addressed by Rav Malchiyo. Shmaitza, those are issues that are of we'll call it Amoraic origin. They're not issues that were featured in a Mishnah per se. So of these six halachas, those are that are associated with Shmaitza are authored by Rav Malchiyo. Now, in terms of, let's say, hierarchy, which information is considered more authoritative or more important, for lack of better expression, Mishnah is stronger. Mishnah is cited as a source. Mishnaic or Tanaic literature can be used as a source to refute statements made by Amoraim. So there's a certain primacy that we associate with Tanaic literature. And hence, if you want to know which one of these names, which are so similar to one another, is associated with which category, the simonech, in order to remember things, Masnisa Malkisa. Masnisa, a reference to Tanaic literature, is like a Malkisa, like a king or a queen. It's of greater significance. Now, in our case, Rav Malchiyo sounds like Malkisa, and he is the one that's associated, according to Rav Papa, with he's the commentator on those of the six halachas, those that are rooted in Mishnayos. So far, things are still a bit abstract. In other words, what is the difference in practical terms between Rav Hanino's breakdown and Rav Papa's breakdown? And here the Gemara addresses that. My Bina, what's the difference between their respective breakdowns? Iko Binayu Shvachos. Here we focus on Shvachos. According to Rav Hanina, the first approach, Shvachos was described or addressed by whom? Well, by Rav Malchiyo. According to Rav Papa, Shvachos, as is quite clear to us who are learning this topic right now, as a topic that you can see very clearly is based on the Mishnah. The Mishnah described the issue of a woman entering marriage with maidservants. So it's a Mishnah-based teaching. Therefore, according to Rav Papa, the author of Mishnah-based teachings, which in this case includes Shvachos, that is authored by Rav Malchi Yah. So just to go over this again, Rav Hanina has Shvachos being addressed by Rav Malchi Yah, and Rav Papa would say it's not Rav Malchi Yah that addressed the issue of Shvachos, but rather Rav Malchi Yah. And hence, at the first wide line of the Gemara, if you just go back five lines, at the end of the line, we had underlined Rav Malchi Yah. According to Rav Papa, it would not be Rav Malchi Yah as the speaker, but rather Rav Malchi Yah. As far as Rashi is concerned, the other topics would just stay the same, so that according to Rav Papa, it would seem to be then we take Shvachos out of Rav Papa. According to Rav Papa, in his opposition to Rav Hanina, we'd be removing Shvachos from under the heading of Rav Malchi Yah and putting Shvachos along with those items that Rav Malchi Yah discussed, giving Rav Malchi Yah four topics that he addressed and Rav Malchi Yah then two topics. I just want to point out that the Tosfos, the Rabbeinu Tam, has the Rashbam in the Tosfos has a different approach. Let's continue in the Gemara. Reb Shmuel Omer v'chulei. Reb Shmuel Leo, in our Mishnah Daf Nun Tesumit Beis, said that if a man is madir es ishto ma'asos melacha, it makes it neder that his wife shall not do melacha, that marriage has to be disbanded because inactivity brings to a state called shiamum, called clinical boredom, where a person can lose his mind. So the Gemara asks, Hainu Tanakama, meaning isn't Rav Shmuel saying the same thing as the Tanakama? Both of them are clearly condemning a situation of inactivity. What's the difference between saying that the inactivity leads to immorality or it leads to a state of insanity? The Gemara says Iko Binayo, a practical case of difference would be the metalala beguraisa kitnaisa vinadrashir. I don't know if you have seen, let's say, there's a certain stereotype of ladies. I'm not sure that they're always little old ladies, but ladies with little poodles, manicured little poodles. If you have seen that in pictures or films or what have you, it's a type of imagery that you see right here in our Talmud. And if we take a look at Rashi, the lower part of the narrow lines right before the next Mishnah commentary, the mitala v'guraisa kitnaisa v'nadrashir, misacheches beklovim dakim, a woman who plays with little dogs, uschok, shikorin, and some type of entertainment or amusement with these creatures, and Rashi gives you a French word. So what's the result? Lidei zimo ika. She's basically a woman who spends her time with her little dog, is still considered, according to the approach of Rabbi Lazar, that's still considered inactivity. So she would be still subject to zima, to insufficient other activity to keep her away from immorality. However, lidei shiamum leka, she's preoccupied to the extent that she won't come to shiamum, she won't come to insanity. Dein shiamum ela b'yosh v'toyu bote legamri. Shiamum, this type of clinical boredom, which leads to shiamum, losing one's mind, that is a possibility only if one is totally inactive. One who sits on a chair or a sofa staring at the ceiling all day. That kind of person is susceptible to shiamum. We continue in the Gemara. We have a new Mishnah. Hamadir es ishto mitash mishamita. A man who takes an oath whereby he vows not to experience the pleasure that a man ordinarily enjoys while experiencing intimacy. So he forswears the benefit, the pleasure from intimacy with his wife. Well, the result of that kind of neder is that the couple is not going to have intimacy, and a marriage cannot be maintained like that. So Beis Shammai omrim shtei shabbosos. Beis Shammai says if he vows and says for 2 weeks I am not going to provide, I'm not going to engage in intimacy, then that is reason for disbanding the marriage. Beis Hillel omrim shabbos achas, 1 week. That's enough reason for disbanding the marriage. You see that Beis Hillel is more restrictive than Beis Shammai. And hence the note on the side indicates this appears in Maseches Edius, a tractate of Mishnayos. There's no Gemara, there's no Talmud on Edius, but in that tractate the Tana lists off areas where Beis Shammai is more lenient than Beis Hillel. We continue with the general topic of intimacy and times allotted to it. You see, we've underlined quite a bit of underlining in this section of the Mishnah. Different forms of occupation have been highlighted, and depending on the type of occupation, that will have influence on when we expect the couple to engage in intimacy. Let us make one thing clear, and this point will be brought out later in the Gemara, that the Reisha deals with a very specific situation of a vow having been taken. Here, we're not dealing with vows. We're just dealing with, say, a normal life experience. HaTalmidim yotzim l'talmud Torah shelo birshus shloshim yom. People who engage in Torah study can leave their homes without their wife's permission for a period of up to 30 days. That means that she is not going to be participating in intimacy with her husband, certainly not on a weekly basis and not on a bi-weekly basis. She's going to be out of vows for 30 days. And that's within the realm of acceptable behavior. Apolim Shabbos Achas. Workers, they can be out of the house for 1 week. Oino amura b'Torah, the oino is the obligation of a man to provide intimacy for his wife, with his wife. So haomer haono amura b'Torah ha'tayolim b'chol yom. Tayolim is an expression the Gemara will have to define later, but they are expected to provide ona every day, of course, assuming that the wife is not a nida. And poalim shtayim b'Shabbos. Poalim are those that would be, again, poalim. We have to deal with the fact that the Mishnah just addressed poalim the line before, and here you see a different time frame that has to be dealt with later. Twice a week, and hachamorim, those are donkey drivers. Achas b'Shabbos, once a week. Hagamolim, achas l'shloshim yom, camel drivers, they travel at much greater distances, and so up till once every 30 days. Hasaponim, seafarers, achas l'shisha chadoshim, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. And seafarers once every 6 months, and this is all in accordance with the Tana, Rabbi Eliezer. Later in the Gemara, we're going to see one of the Amoraim taking the approach that this is Rabbi Lezer's approach, but the Chachomim have a different approach to this matter. Maitaimo de Beis Shammai. Regarding Madir Ishto, one who vows not to engage in intimacy with his wife, and we phrased it very carefully when we presented the Mishnah, that a person's vow, in the text of his vow, he says, I forswear my benefiting from my wife's intimacy. A husband has no right to say, I am not going to provide intimacy for my wife. But if he phrases it this way, there is a vow. It's just that intimacy, in effect, won't be provided. But if you swear, if you vow directly not to provide intimacy for one's wife, that doesn't get off the ground because he is bound to providing intimacy for his wife. Here, he's saying that he wants to forswear the benefit he would receive from it, so that is a form of neder that takes effect, but it still is going to result in this intolerable situation. So, what is the basis of the two-week period that Beis Shammai mentioned? Answer Gamri, they learn Mioledes Nekeva, from a woman who bears a female child. The Torah tells us that a woman who gives birth to a little girl, so she's in a state of tumah, of defilement, and hence prohibited to her husband for a period of 2 weeks. So we see that women, through the Torah itself, entertain the possibility of a woman being prohibited for 2 weeks. Therefore, if he makes this vow that says that let's say up till 2 weeks that he won't he forswears benefit from her, we cannot force him to separate from her. Beis Hillel Gamri Mioledes Zohar. Beis Hillel learns from the Torah's teaching regarding a woman who gives birth to a male child where she is Tmeah for 1 week. The Gemara asks, Beis Hillel Nami Nigmaru Mioledes Nekeva. Why doesn't Beis Hillel learn like Beis Shammai and learn from the 2 week period associated with a female birth? The Gemara answers, E Mioledes Gamri Law. If Beis Hillel in fact learned from the topic of birth, Hachi Nami, I would agree. Ela Beis Hillel Minida Gamri Law. And that's why you see a little Beis in Kinnings, that the basis of Beis Hillel is not like we thought, the line above where the Aleph was learning from birth, but rather Beis Hillel learns from the laws of Nida. Now the laws of Nida, again, on the according to the Torah, and we're not speaking in terms of practical halacha. We never attempt to speak in terms of practical halacha when we have our Gemara markings recordings. But nevertheless, the Torah, when it speaks about Nida, says that a woman, when she becomes a menstruant, she is forbidden for that week to her husband. So there's precedent in the Torah for a man being off limits to his wife for 1 week. So that's the precedent for Beis Hillel's figure of Shabbos Achas, 1 week. B'mai Komifli, what's the underlying logic in this machlokas between Shammai and Beis Hillel? Mor Sovar, Beis Hillel is of the opinion, Midi Dishchiach, Mimidi Dishchiach. We learn that which is common from a precedent that is common. And here's a very, very interesting sociological or familial marital observation. That which is common, Rashi on the fourth line under the Gemara, Midi Shchiach Kaas Shikoyis Al Ishto Umadiro. The facts of life. None of us are naive. Facts of life are that men express their anger or get angry at their wives, and that's described as something frequent. And not only do they get angry at their wives, but in their anger they also vow. This kind of behavior, and by the way, we do not encourage that. This is not something that we smile upon, but we've mentioned many times in recent shiurim that the Torah, that the Talmud especially, deals on an earthly level. It deals with the reality of life, and it of course makes reference to things to strive for as well, but when learning the Talmud, everyone should feel very, very comfortable in the sense that if you're dealing with I call it a living entity that is talking to each one of us as we are, as you call it, your basic raw human being. And your basic raw human being is someone that gets angry frequently, with his wife. It's sad. It's unfortunate. We're supposed to rise above that. But again, the Talmud talks to us on a very basic level. And since this is a regular phenomenon, we derive or we learn it from that, all that which is also a regular phenomenon. Here we're talking about biology. It's a regular feature of most women to experience a menstrual cycle. And regularity, commonness of Nida is much more pronounced than the frequency of birth. So the Nida, the 1 week standard that you see by Nida, is the basis of Beis Hillel saying that a one who vows preventing the intimacy with one's wife is only if it's that is a, let's say, a serious vow if it is for even 1 week. Umar Savar Beis Shammai, who didn't learn from Nida but rather learned from the issue of pregnancy and birth, Midi de hu gorim law, midi de hu gorim law. Gorim means to cause. The vow taken is something that he caused. He made the vow. And for how long? From something else that he causes. He impregnates the woman. So that's what something he causes. And therefore it, pregnancy and birth and the defilement that results therefrom is something that can be traced back to the husband. Omar Rav, Machlokes b'Meforesh. The Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel is where he specified, he spelled out an amount of time. Avol b'Stam, if a person vows without adding any time factor to the vow, that's b'Stam, an unqualified vow. Divrei Hakol, everyone agrees, Yoytzi la'alter v'yiten ksuba. This couple is to immediately separate and divorce, and she receives her ksuba payment. Ushmuel, he disagrees with Rav Amar, afilu b'stam, even if he vows without a time frame, nami yamtin, we should wait, according to Beis Shammai, 2 weeks, according to Beis Hillel, 1 week, shemo yimtza pesach nidra, maybe within that time frame, the husband will find an opening, a way to rescind the vow. This idea of rescinding a vow means where the husband finds some point at which he regrets having made the vow, approaches a Torah scholar, and the Torah scholar is vested with the power of absolving him of the vow. So it's true, people get angry, they flip their handle, as they say, but in the course of time, they may come to regret. So how much time do we give that regret to develop? Beis Shammai will tell you 2 weeks, and Beis Hillel 1 week. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice the question is a long question. We have it marked thusly. The Gemara asks, Ha pligi ba chadazimna. Have they not already argued about this once? Namely, Rav and Shmuel. We have a Tanaic source, and on this Tanaic source you'll see a comment made by Rav and by Shmuel. Disnan hamadir es ishto milhonus lo ad shloshim yom yamid parnas. Person who vowed that his wife shall not benefit from him. So up till 30 days, the parnas is set up. Parnas is called an intermediary, through whom she will be supported. Yosher mikan, yotzi v'iten ksuba. More than that, then the couple must divorce, and she receives payment. The Omar Rav lo shana ela b'meforish avol b'stam yotzi le'alter v'iten ksuba. Once again, we see, like before, where the idea of holding out is only when he spells out the amount of time. But if it's stam, if it's an unspecified amount of time, that if the vow is made with an unspecified amount of time, then divorce must be made immediately. Shmuel Amar Afilu Bestam Nami Yamtin Shemo Yimtza Pesach Linidro. Shmuel, like we saw before, says that if it's, even if it's stam, we still wait. We don't insist on the couple divorcing immediately. So the question remains, why do Rav and Shmuel have to teach their respective opinions twice? Once in the topic of Madir Asishto Mitashmish, and again in the topic of Madir Asishto Gahonislo. The Gemara says, Sricha, I need this double teaching. Diet Marbaha, had it been taught only in our Mishnah with regard to Madir Asishto Mitashmish, Baha Koma Rav, here Rav would tell you that if it's stam, they must divorce immediately. Mishum de lo efshe beparnas, because it's a type of vow that whose solution cannot be accomplished through an intermediary. He vowed not to provide, not to receive any personal benefit from intimacy with his wife. There's no, it's a husband wife. It's exclusively husband wife related. Aval bahi, in the case of a husband who said he's not going to provide support to his wife, not provide benefit to his wife, support to his wife, the efshur b'parnas, the issue of providing the wife with support is possible through an intermediary. Amol modi le l'shmuel. Maybe Rav would agree with Shmuel if he is mother as Yishan Lomislo in a stam fashion, an unqualified fashion, not so quick to separate the couple. So therefore, it's not enough if we see Rav's point of view just with Madir Zishto Mitashmish. I would not have known what Rav's opinion would be in the case of Madir Zishto Milhanislo. I would have thought that he agrees with Shmuel, and he does not. Vietmar Bahi, and had we taught the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel only with regard to Madir Zishto Milhanislo, Ba'akumar Shmuel, there Shmuel says, in a stam situation, let's wait. Aval Baha, in the case of Madir Mitashmish, Ema Modul Rav, maybe Shmuel would have assumed Rav's position that it's an intolerable situation. There's no intermediary that can move into the picture. Let's split them immediately. Tzricha, therefore, I have to tell you that even in that case, Shmuel maintains his opinion that we wait. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.